You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is it. We're live. Episode 100. Talking about legends today. Oh my God! How can I never thought I could do any better than this, but now there it is. Mr. George St. Pierre, Master Renzo Gracie. Welcome, guys. Thank you so much for this. This is super exciting.
Pleasure to be here with you, my brother. It's a pleasure, bro.
Thank you to have.
You good there? How we doing, George?
Doing fantastic, guys. Thank you for having me on the show.
No, thank you for coming on the show. Oh, my God. I know you're a very private guy, so that makes us appreciate that even more. So thank you. Thank you again, George. I have no words for that.
My pleasure.
Look, George is the best. I was just talking before how the Canadians are actually the Brazilians from North America. You know, exactly, with a big heart, with huge French influence, you know. On the food, on the humor, on everything. It's amazing souls. Every time I go to Canada, I feel like I'm home. I'm back in Rio, you know, among family members.
That's
and
right.
George, every time I go there, I see George and, you know, he makes us feel like we're home, man. It's amazing. I remember when this kid used to come down by bus to train with us, you know, long time. He would leave Montreal, come train the whole day and then take the bus back. So people think he became a champion. Without that, he was just a talent guy. No, I never see nobody work as hard as he does. After surgery, after replacement of ACL, you see his butt in the gym, working out gymnastics, working, training, sparring, and getting himself. I never see George once, and I know him since he was a little kid, this guy, probably like 16 or 17. I never see him out of shape once. Even after surgery, he would go back straight and get himself in shape, you know? Nobody, I believe, nobody deserved to be a champion like he did, you know? Nobody earned it so with so much sweat, so much effort like George did, you know? We're very fortunate to have a chance to work with him. You know, it was a great honor to see him growing and becoming the amazing champion that he always was and is. You know, to me, there's nobody like him.
And the legend, right? Like Mr. UFC Hall of Fame this year. How is that? How does that feel, man?
I just feel very lucky. I had, during my journey, I had the chance to have incredible mentors. And Renzo is one of them. Renzo is a mentor, but he's also an inspiration. Because before I even got into mixed martial art, he was my inspiration. All the Gracie, him, his brother, and that's why I started. And that's why I traveled to New York, because I wanted to learn from the best and to grow into the sport of mixed martial art.
And remember your teacher, Angelo? Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Ah, man, I miss him so much. He was the one that introduced you to us, remember?
Yeah.
He used to come and train with me in 1996.
And Angelo was one of the first students of Renzo when he moved in New York. And Angelo lives in Montreal. And he always told me that I should, if I have time, I should go in New York and train. And there I will find out what is the true power of jiu-jitsu. Because the school that he used to have in Montreal was a young school, so the student that he has was not as much developed that they were in New York. So I remember I traveled to New York the first time. I was very young, and I was shocked. I remember I got my butt kicked so bad that I wanted to quit at the time. But one of your students, Sean William, that was teaching the class at the time, told me that, you know, George, you have to come back and you're going to learn and get better. And that's what I did, you know. And I got a very warm welcome, and I felt like I was It was like a new family for me.
When you are part of the family, mon frère, c'est ma plaisir.
Merci beaucoup.
Demais. George, and you always did your training camps in Canada, but you did a good part of it, the jiu-jitsu training. I remember, like, you were here, like, early in the morning, like, for the 7 o'clock classes and stuff like that. How much of a influence on your game? Like, you were always a very good wrestler, and you were always very strong on the ground. And like you say, right, like, you wanted to learn from the best. When did you, like, all right, I'm going to make that part of my camp, and I'm going to travel to New York? And some people think I'm crazy to drive an hour to train in Renzo's, right? He traveled from Montreal here.
Well, to go back, at first, when I got to New York, I was coming by bus because I didn't have the money to take the plane. So I had to to travel by bus or to drive. But at the time, I was driving a very bad car. It was a Ford Tempo, and it was broken. I didn't even know if I could make it to the... You know, to New York, or if I would have stalled on the way there, or in halfway down the road. So I came to New York, and I couldn't really speak English at the time. My Spanish was better than my English, so I remember I lost myself in the Bronx at first, and I asked people in Spanish, "¿Dónde está Manhattan?" And they on my way back, arrive at Renzo. Renzo's school at the time was in a different location than it is right now. It was in a different neighborhood. I think they had like it was a center for people that was a drug addict or some.
Yes.
Some
that was like, a methadone. That was a methadone clinic.
Yes.
37th Street, 37 and 8.
So imagine I can't speak English, and I end up in this neighborhood, and I took the elevator, and in the elevator with me there is like a lot of junkie, you know, a lot of people on drug, like they it looked like the dawn of the death, you know, the zombie, they were all like this, and I couldn't believe it at first. I was very intimidated. I was like, man, what the hell I just did, you know, why did I, Angelo told me to come here, he must have been wrong, you know, I must be at the wrong place. So I got into the jiu-jitsu class, and in Canada, in Montreal, I've always been a good athlete. I could, because of my athletic ability, I was able to dominate my opponent, you know, my training partner. I was able to do well, you know, survive at least. So when I got to New York, it was Renzo Gracie's, one of his first teachers was teaching the class, Sean William. And Sean William was about 20 pounds lighter than me. And after he teach that class, he was teaching an incredible technique. The detail how he was teaching Renzo's student and Renzo himself, when they teach, they have an incredible detail. They had the detail that like I never seen before. So even though my English, I couldn't pick up the English, the way they were teaching, I was able to pick up the detail just by visualize. And after that, after the class, we start rolling, you know, to do a live training. And I remember I rolled with Sean William. He was, like I said, 20 pounds lighter than me, and he beat me up so bad, like in a good way. He didn't, you know, hurt me, nothing like that, but he outclassed me, and I never felt something like this in my life, to be completely neutralized by a guy who weighs 20, 25 pounds lighter than me. I was already a black belt in karate, and I was a good athlete, and I felt completely like in a straight jacket. And immediately after the class, Sean was very nice. I remember because I was start questioning myself, do I really want to do that for a living? Because there's no way I can be as good as this guy. He's like, he just shut down my whole game. He played with me. And Sean came and he was very nice. He said, you know, George, I was able to understand what he said. He said, you know, you need to come back. You'll learn. I beat you because I'm stronger, because I have more knowledge than you, but you will get your knowledge if you keep coming back. And he kind of gave me a pep talk, and I came back, and I got better over time.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? I know exactly how you feel. I'm a big guy. I'm like 6'4", and my professors, they much smaller than me. And they just literally, like, they just manhandle you. It's like, how is that even possible, right? Like, I'm big, I'm heavy and stuff. It's I get it.
The idea of a fight before, like, I saw the UFC, you know, Royce Gracie, but the idea that I had of a real fight was, you know, like in the movie, you know, bing, bang, bang. And feeling that, feel completely worthless in a position that I can't move, and my opponent could literally talk to me as he's beating me up. I never felt anything like that. So that's how I discovered the real power of jiu-jitsu when I became an addict, you know?
Yeah, the jiu-jitsu addict, right? Because not the addict from those buildings there, right?
No.
Talk about a shady place, right? Like, I was like, all right, it's like the Walking Dead.
No, the place was crazy. The place was crazy. Vem, querido. Vem pra cá. Chama cá. Cheguei o Baldão.
You have visitors, right, Renzo?
Yeah. I have a friend of mine who's the ex-minister of culture from Brazil. He just arrived. We're going to be doing a project together and making a lot of new stuff. George, my brother, I love you too much. Put up with this guy a little bit more. I'm going to leave you guys. And it's an honor to be here sharing this show with you, and thanks for talking to jiu-jitsu from your heart, brother.
Is mine,
you know,
so you're part stay of the well family, and healthy, you know. My friend.
Love you. Rafael, take good care of him, Paul.
I will.
Teach
I will
him
for
some
sure.
Portuguese words.
I will for
he
sure.
He knows them all already. All the bad ones. Love you, George.
Thanks, Professor.
See you
thanks,
guys
Renzo.
Soon, brother. Thank you.
Thanks for doing this.
Bye-bye, brother.
Bye-bye. So, George. So I wanted to touch a little more on that training part, on the traveling, because you were always big about, I love the lifestyle. You always say, like, you hate the actual fighting moment, but you love the training, you love the hustle, the workout, right? Like, so that's a big part of your focus, right?
Yeah, exactly. I in life, I always had long-term goal and short-term goal. My long-term goals is, you know, I didn't completely accomplish all my long-term goals, but that's what it is. Here, my house, I'm free. I mean, I'm free to a certain level. I always, you know, I pay my taxes. I still have a responsibility, you know, but I have a lot more freedom than I used to have. So I never fought because I like to fight. I actually don't like to fight. I'm a different guy. A lot of guys in MMA, they love to fight. I do not like to fight. I despise it to the highest point. I like the training. I like the freedom of lifestyle of a martial artist. I love, of course, I was gifted with a good talent, and I exploited it. I worked really hard, and I met an incredible mentor to my journey, and I was able to make a lot of money with it. Of course, because of celebrity status, I have access to certain things that people don't have. So all that comes with the sacrifice that I've made. But in order to have these, I have to make the sacrifice. So it's like a gamble. I mean, it's a gamble, but you never know if you're going to make it or not. And I'm very fortunate that I'm one of them, one of the guys who made it.
And on the process, right? Because I can only imagine how tough it is for you to prepare for something that you don't like, right? It's like, I'm doing all of this that I enjoy so I can get to that point where I don't like what I'm doing. How do you get mentally strong for that to be, because you see some guys that, like, they all say, like, sometimes they just don't turn on during, like, they're like, oh shit, I don't really want to be here, and they usually lose the fights, and that's when they kind of, like, retire. How do you
a quality, one of the main quality of a champion is a champion can be good and can perform when it counts. There's a lot of guys, they are king in the gyms. But when the lights turns on and they have to do it for real, now it's a different ball game. So there's a lot of things to consider. There's the stress, the pressure. A lot of people they crumble under pressure. For me, in my part, I believe that the fear of failure and the pressure always played on my side. I feel I perform at my best when I'm on the edge. You know, when I have like feeling of do or die. And also, it's for these reasons that I put a lot of pressure on myself, because I knew that's how I perform at my best. But I never enjoyed fighting once. I enjoy sometimes the process, the training, being with my training partner, the science of it, you know, the game plan, the brainstorming. This is cool. This is like a brotherhood that you have, and that's what I miss about fighting, the brotherhood of getting ready together for war. It's a lot of fun. But the fighting itself, it's very stressful. I never enjoyed it. And at the point that at one point in my life, I asked myself, I said, maybe I'm not normal, because I see a lot of my training partner in the locker room. They are very happy to be there. They're like, yeah, I'm excited. And when I saw a sports psychologist, because I thought I was crazy, I told the sports psychologist, I said, I don't feel like I love what I'm doing. Is that normal? I'm scared. And the sports psychologist tried to brainwash me and say, George, don't say you're scared. Say you're excited. But I'm not excited. What does that mean, excited? I'm excited if I see a beautiful naked woman. I'm excited if I... if I fasted for 3 days and I'm about to eat my favorite dish, I'm excited. If it's minus 15 in Montreal and I know I'm going in Brazil for vacation, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm excited to go in a cage, not knowing if I will be humiliated, knocked out, or brain damage. That doesn't excite me. The victory excites me, but not knowing the outcome of the fight scares me to the highest point, and I do not like that feeling at all.
Yeah, and I always thought it was really amazing how well you always kept like under control. You never went for the, like, everybody wanted to fight you and go for like a street fight, right? Because that's the only way they can catch you with something, right? So, and you were always good, and like you say, like, you always, the difference is that you always were so good under pressure. It was like you get it to a different level. On those rematches against Matt Hughes and Sarah, was there any time, like, is that just increases the pressure and you say, all right, I got to do even better because I lost to that guy?
Oh, yeah, of course. It's also a question of pride. This is one of my best thing and worst thing at the same time. I'm a very proud person. And, you know, when I got into a fight, you know, I got someone that beat you, you don't want to lose twice, because, you know, if you lose twice, it's gone. You're not going to see that guy again.
Yeah.
So there's these things, you know, like when I got into a fight, I tried to focus only on the objective stuff, the thing that I needed to do in order to win. And these things need to be done at all costs, no matter what. I do not focus on the subjective thing. The subjective thing is how I feel, what people are going to say about me, what the other guy going to do, because I have not a direct control over these things. The only thing that I have a direct control are the stuff that I assure that need to be done in order for me to win. So when I go into a fight, no matter how much emotion there is and how much drama, tension, I don't focus on that. I'm very good at focusing only on the objective thing, the game plan that I need to do in order to win. Because the night of a... during a fight, it's not always the best fighter that wins the game. In football, it's not always the best team that wins the game. It's the team that play the best the night of the game. Fighting is no different. There's guys that can beat guys that are better than them. However, because they have made a mistake, that night, at that particular moment, they will win the fight. You know, so and I'm a very confident person because the confidence, it's a choice, and it comes from how you prepare yourself. And I always prepare myself to the best of my abilities. So I'm going in the fight very confident, thinking that I am the best. However, it's not always the best that win the fight. So in order to make sure, to reassure that I'm not making mistakes, I'm not focusing on the subjective, I'm focusing only on the objective things that need to be done.
That's crazy. And then you have guys like I don't know, in your case, you have like Nick Diaz, right? That try, yeah, like at all costs, do kind of what Conor McGregor does today, like, which is like, take your like your mental stability out of the game. So like that fight with Jose Aldo, right? Like Conor McGregor, he won that fight before the fight.
I believe, because at that time Jose Aldo was in his prime, I believe you could have made that fight 10 times. I seriously believe that Jose Aldo could have beat McGregor at least 6 times out of 10, maybe more. But that night, McGregor played with his head.
Yes.
Made him so emotional that Jose Aldo, the only thing that he thought about is to give him the big knockout punch. And McGregor is like a sniper.
Yeah.
He's a good counter-puncher, and Jose Aldo, unfortunately for him, fall into the trap.
Exactly.
So the mistake that he made, it's a little bit like the same mistake I made when I fought Matt Serra. Matt Serra clipped me with a punch behind the ear. Instead of stepping back and recompose like I should have done, I wanted to give him back right away. So I forgot what was my objectives thing, and I became emotional because I'm a very proud guy. I didn't want to be rocked in front of everybody. I wanted to give it to him right away, and these can have a huge effect on your performance.
Exactly, and I always say that it's like 100% to your words. So you have two professional fighters there. They both really good. Whoever makes less mistakes usually wins, right? Like how can you say who, like, if you put it on a tennis game, like Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal, how can you say one is better than the other, right? Like, it's whoever makes it sleeps better, whoever had like a better weight cut in your case. There's a thousand different factors, right? And Joe Rogan had this awesome analogy that he says, look, if you zig and you should have zagged, the fight's over. It's that quick too, right?
I am a big believer in determinism. I believe, I mean, this, a lot of people can argue, I believe we don't have free will. I believe everything in our lives is determined by the causality. And by definition, if there's a cause, there is no free will. We do not always understand the cause of things that happen. But I believe there is always a cause. And if there is cause, there is no, you know, you can't, I believe you cannot do something without cause. I mean, if I do this and I drink, there's a cause, the reason why I've done it, you know, like, uh-huh. Of course. Anyway, on a philosophical point of view, you can argue like over time on this, but I believe fighting and sport results are the same. You never know what can influence the performance of an athlete. And yeah, like you said, when you should have zigged, when you should have zagged. Normally, you would zig. Normally, you would zag, but that day you zig and. That's
exactly right, and it's all over because you have another professional in front of you too, right? It's a crazy feeling. So look, you retired, you came back against Bisping, got the belt. It was an awesome fight. You say you had a lot of trouble preparing for that fight, right? Like going up in weight and stuff like that. It was totally something totally different for you.
I made a crucial mistake that I've learned, and I grew from it. But I always believe that if I wanted to go fight at 185 pounds, 84 kilo, I needed to be bigger, naturally bigger, and then cut down to increase my performance and chance to win against a bigger man. So what I did when I fought Michael Bisping, I follow the regime of a naturopath. Someone gave me a regime, and I follow it, and it caused me a lot of problem because I forced myself to overfed myself. Mm-hmm. With the stress, and I probably with the genetic predisposition, I got a condition that is called ulcer colitis. And I believe I would not have had that if I would not try to eat as much as I did. So I did it, the fight happened, and the result was the result that I wanted. But I believe if I would have stayed the same weight that I am normally walk around, I could have performed better, even though my opponent would have been bigger than me. Uh-huh. And that's a mistake that I've done, because I always believe that if you want to fight in a higher weight class, you need to make it bigger. But the body has an optimal weight and physiognomy where he can perform at his best. That's what I learned for my.
Yeah, no, and it makes sense because you guys walk a lot heavier than you usually fight anyway, right? So you're just saying, if you had not put more weight on yourself, instead of just cutting weight, you just go with your weight, you would have performed better.
I would have. Normally, I weigh about 185, 187 pounds, which is 84, 85 kilo. Uh-huh. So I've maybe cut 1 pound, but Bisping would have, of course, been much bigger than me. Would have been 210, 25, you know.
Yeah.
But it would not have matter. I think I would have performed better because I felt like I was carrying a little bit, like if you carry a bag on your shoulder, you know, like that extra weight. After the fight, I made an experiment on myself because I had a condition called colitis. I wanted to get rid of my symptoms, so I start to experiment intermittent fasting. And I went into an exoscan immediately after the fight with Bisping, like a week after, and I weigh myself. And I start doing a program of intermittent fasting, and I came back 2 months after, and my weight on the scales have diminished, but I found out that the extra weight that I had when I fought Bisping was mostly water retention, and my muscle mass was even bigger when I started to do intermittent fasting. My bone density increased and my water retention drastically diminished, and my fat percentage diminished too. So basically, the weight that I gained was just water retention, which is not good.
Which, you know, you don't want to have anything, right?
Not part of your solid mass.
Yeah, yeah. As far as performance, does very little for you, right?
So, I agree.
Do you have a contract now with the UFC, or are you out of a contract?
Oh, I had a contract when I fought Michael Bisping. Yes, I did. Then after what happened is, after even during the fight camp, I got very sick. I had blood. I thought I had cancer. It was very bad.
Wow.
So I didn't want to do like a lot of guys have done, to hold on the division. And I could have done it for 1 year, walk around with the middleweight belt and take the sponsorship and all the money, the fame, everything that comes. But I didn't do it because I didn't want to disrespect the rest of the crowd. What I've done, I knew I was going to be out for a few months at least, and I decided to relinquish the belt because I don't want to hold on the division.
Yeah,
because you see a lot of guys, they're doing it, and it's not cool. This is not cool. That's what we do for a living, and a lot of guys they don't have a lot of money in this business. So you have to play fair.
Yeah, you're right. And I remember there was a lot of talking about maybe like a super fight with Khabib that never materialized. It was 100% a contract. And I know you talked about these things like 1,000 times here, but nothing for Brazil. So I'm going to spend a couple of days putting Portuguese subtitles so people there can know what you're talking about. You have so many fans there. You have no idea. It's awesome.
After I retired, we tried, right before we retired, we tried to make a fight with Khabib wanted to fight me, and I wanted to fight him. However, the UFC didn't want to make the fight happen. The UFC did not. That's not Khabib. That's not me. It's the UFC that didn't want to do it. They said they had other problems. And also, I believe, you know, contrary to boxing, the model of UFC is made that they promote the organization first and the fighter second. In boxing, for example, you have champion that comes and goes all the time, that drop the belt, then they go to another belt, they drop it, they come, they back. It doesn't matter.
And you don't even know who's promoting it, right? You just know the guy.
Exactly. However, the model of UFC is a little bit like Vaseline for petrol jelly. The way they promote their brand is, they promote the UFC 251, Usman versus Covington, or, you know, on the bottom, but it's UFC is the main one. So because of that, they didn't want me to, for example, let's say I had Johnny Hendricks, I left, then I have Michael Bisping at middleweight, grab the belt, left, and they didn't want me to go grab the other belt.
Okay, yeah.
For that risk. That's probably not what I would have done, but because of that, it was a risk. They said no way. But in my mind, I don't think they should care that much. It's for the fans, and they make money regardless.
Yeah.
It cares about the title. They just made a new title, the BMF title. It's a new title.
Mm-hmm.
Title is like a, you know, like an achievement. It comes and goes. I don't think we should attach that much importance to the title. Yeah. I believe sometimes the best fighter are not necessarily the title holder.
It's just like a prize, right? Like it
knows that.
It's an extension. It's the extension to the prize, right? Like, look, you go here, you do this, you get paid, plus you get a belt just to celebrate your victory, kind of thing, right? It shouldn't be all about. Do you think that's the reason why that Anderson Silva super fight never happened either?
This is another reason. I at the time when it was always a talk, but I never had a contract like this.
That was never on the table. Like, hey, let's try to make this happen.
It never happened. It was always a talk. It was always a talk, and when it was a talk, it was a few years ago. They were considering making the fight happen, and I was like, at the time, it was before I left the sport the first time. I was like, okay, like if you want to do, you will do in a catch weight, because I thought in my mind, if I would have fight Silva, he's much bigger than me. I'm gonna have to gain weight, and I want him to go down because my career is at 170. I'm not going to go 185 and come back. I've seen a lot of guys like done it, and it's not when they go up the problem.
Yeah.
It's when they come back. Like, look at Roy Jones. That's what screwed up Roy Jones. He went up heavyweight, fight Ruiz. He did very well. Then came back, Antonio Tarver knocked him out.
Yeah.
And because the playing with your weight like this is not good. So in my mind, I thought that at the time, I didn't know. I thought I needed to get bigger if I fight a bigger man. So I wanted to do it halfway, and I wanted to implement the drug testing for the UFC at the time. USADA was not there at the time, and it was only a talk. I remember one time we had Lorenzo and Dana in the same room, and that's what I said. I said, if you want to do it, that's my condition. We need to do it. Otherwise, I'm not going to go 185, then come back down and go, because the career of an athlete, it's 10 years.
Yeah.
You need to maximize the amount of money you make in 10 years. And I was not at the end. I was like towards, like around the middle. And I knew I had other fights to do at once, to cement my legacy, to make the money for my career. So I didn't want to break that momentum, then go up. I said, okay, if we do it, it's halfway. I tell Dino and Lorenzo, halfway, and drug testing as well include. And they were, I don't know, they didn't came back to me with this. But it was always a speculation of, hey, you, Silva. So that's what I was going on. And at the time, I had a lot of contender. It was not like I needed a challenge. I had like so many different guys. Plenty. Even before my fight finished, I had a guy that was already there waiting for me, talking trash, challenging me. So my mind was not focusing on one particular. Exactly. I had many threats coming left and right.
Exactly. You still feel, you said it before that you still feel like a comeback it's possible as long as the contract is kind of shaped the way you want, right? Like you don't want to be tied up to like a 8-fight deal, like a 5-fight deal kind of thing, right? You want to do like one, take your time, take your break, maybe come back and do another one, but one at a time, right?
I don't even know. I have a mixed feeling about it. When I retired, I always said, like, I don't want to be a slave. I don't want to be, like to sign a contract. And if I win, I need to fight again in less than 6 months. Otherwise, I'm liable for liquidated damage. And, you know, that's mean that I'm going to have to pay from my pocket millions of dollars to leave. That doesn't make sense. Where do you see this? We need to be free. And have the choice of doing what we want to do.
Yeah.
And I never wanted to fight for a title. What interested me was fighting a certain opponent.
Yes.
The title don't really care about me, but the
like super fights that we've been talking about, right? Like fan. Let's not call it super fights. Let's call it the like fan fights. Hey, what about you and this guy? Yeah. And if you say, hey, this is a challenge, I would like to overcome.
Fight, I didn't care. It was like at 155. I don't even know. I never been at 155. I don't care. It could be a catch weight. It could be a, you know. But the UFC, they attach a lot of importance to titles and things like this. The model of their business is different than boxing, and I believe for these reasons it never materialized. But right now I'm 39 years old and I have very mixed feelings. Sometimes I'm watching fights, and I'm like, man, I could beat this guy. I'm very confident. So? If I pull back, it gives me goosebumps because I wanted to do it. Or yeah. After a training. I mean, now I'm not training. I mean, you know, we're in this crisis that social distancing and things like that. So I cannot grapple. But when I'm training normal in an average day, I'm in the gym. Even the young guy, they're like, hey, George, I'm still in shape. They're like, hey. Are you preparing a comeback? Tell me the truth. They think I'm preparing a comeback. I don't. I just train because I love to train. I'm a martial artist, not because I'm getting ready for a fight. And when I'm in the gym and you ask me, would you like to fight again? I'm like, yeah, bring it. I feel good. But then I go home, I eat something and I'm thinking about it. I'm like, am I crazy? Why am I going to go back in a cage? The risks are not worth it. I mean, and I don't like to fight. I'm like, why would I do that? I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. Of course, you always want more, and the competitor inside me will always be there. But in the same time, I'm working on different other projects right now, and that's how I can put my competitive spirit in. I don't think fighting would be smart. Because too many athletes in combat sport, they retire too late. And I don't want to be one of these guys.
that makes sense. I see, like, they say, like, Anderson's preparing for a fight now. He's back training and stuff. Listen, which I'm all cool about it. Because to some point, right, like, if they give this guy the opportunity to do something like you want, say, look, I want to fight that guy because I think it's a good challenge for me. Not just because I have to fight 8 more times because that's what my contract says, right? Like
exactly. Basically, we do it for the fans. The fans are the one that pays us.
Exactly.
That's what I think. You know, I don't think I should be obligated to fight for title or this and that. Let's just make a fight. I don't even, to tell you the truth, if I would be the owner of this whole thing, the way the sport works, it would be much different than it is right now. First, it would be no round. It would be a fight of 15 minutes, no round, because we tried, when we made it legal, we tried to model our sport to boxing, but it's not, it ain't boxing.
Yeah.
It's more like, you want to see who's the best man, let them fight. Don't interrupt the fight, just let them fight. No round, maybe 15 minutes for a regular fight, 25 for a championship fight, no round, like just like one shot.
Wow.
And I would be no title. I would say maybe if you just a ranking system would be the one that will determine, you know, and who knows? I mean, maybe I'm completely wrong, but I would make
no, it. Some people are even talking about cross promotions, right? Like get the top guy from the UFC to fight the top guy from Bellator. And see who the top guy is, and right, like that makes total sense.
And also, when you have judging systems, sometimes because of the round and the way they judge, sometimes there's a lot of ambiguity. I would say if it's the scoring system, if after 15 or 25 minutes, if there's not a majority of judges that give the victory to a certain guy, there is no victory. It's a draw. Hey, that's it. I mean, you can't really do it in the world that we live in because we structure our sport like boxing.
Yeah.
Even though marketably speaking, we don't use the same model as boxing.
Exactly.
So we need a complete revision of it, I believe.
Yeah. Look, just for us to finish here, I have a very good friend. Her name is Paula Sack. She's a reporter. She's a reporter from Brazil, and she did a thing for a TV show there where you were surfing in Rio, right?
We used to make fun. It's called la fanfarrona. Paula Sack, la fanfarrona. Making joke all the time.
She sent me this. She's like, "Yo, you're gonna talk to George, asking me if he ever did anything like that again, like it's surfing again. If you ever try any other sports at that level, and if you have to put a belt on you on surfing, which belt you would put on your waist?"
I miss Brazil a lot. I haven't been for a long time, and I can't wait. I it's just sad what is going on right now. I just hope the Brazilian stay safe and healthy, and it's very unfortunate. It's a beautiful country, and the economy, everything. Unfortunately, I just wish it would be like good people, and the country will you know, it's an amazing country, an amazing culture. It's a lot of fun, but unfortunately, it's very dangerous.
Yes,
it's very dangerous, and. Man, I miss Brazil, man. I miss SAE, the beach, the jiu-jitsu, the people, the culture. I had a lot of fun there.
Yeah.
And I want to go back as soon as this whole thing finish. I want to go back in there. It's one of my favorite places in the world to go.
Look, I did a show with Brandon Gibson from Jackson's MMA. And I asked him, he's the John Jones striking coach. And I say, "Coach, if you have to name your five goats," well, he named Jones first because it's his guy, and you were second. It's like GSP for the body of work, and then he got Aldo. I don't remember who else. Oh, Fedor, and then Conor. He said Conor just for everything he did for the sport and the eyes that he brought to the sport. If you have to name your five goats, you can count, okay? You can say I'm number one because you would be my number one. But excluding yourself, who will be the your five goats?
I it's a very tough question, it's a subjective question. It's not an objective question. For example, if I ask you who's the fastest man who ever lived, we're all going to say Usain Bolt because we have the evidence of it.
Uh-huh.
Who's the strongest Olympic lifter of all time? We have the evidence. Fighting, it's a sport that we don't have evidence because we don't know how this guy would have matched up against this guy. We just have a few examples of matchup. And even those matchups sometimes can change. You know that... If a guy beat a guy one day, doesn't mean he will beat him every day.
That's why it makes the sport so crazy for us, right?
If you ask me to do my GOAT, for sure I have to put number one, Royce Gracie.
Okay.
For time, Royce Gracie have accomplished things that nobody have done. For his time, of course, if you put him in the octagon now, it's a different game. But like Einstein said, we stand on shoulders of giants. Because what Royce Gracie have done, Ken Shamrock, Mark Coleman, and all those guys, Marco Ruas, we developed technique watching them. And because of what they have done, we reach a certain level. And fighters today are better than the fighters of yesterday, and the fighters of tomorrow will be better than the one of today. That's how it is. We should not forget our pioneer, Royce Gracie, and all those guys. So Royce Gracie, number one. I would say Anderson Silva, number two.
Okay.
I would say John Jones, three, of course. PDJ Penn isn't there. And Demetrius Johnson, he could be there as well. That's a great one. And there's a lot of guys that are maybe competing today, like Khabib Nurmagomedov, never lost.
Yeah.
He's very good. Israel Adesanya, never lost. Kamaru Usman is very good as well. So there's a lot of guys on their way of going in those GOAT discussion as well.
Did you ever bump into Khabib here at Renzo's? You guys ever train together?
No, never did. No, I've seen him a few times in Russia and in I think in Vegas. I've seen him. He's a very nice guy. And my condolence to him, because his father unfortunately passed away. So my condolence to Khabib.
Yeah. All right, George. This was one of the highlights of my show for sure. Thank you so much for doing this. Anytime you're in New York, I'll take you to lunch and we'll put a train together. Let's hope this pandemic goes away soon and we'll get to get together hands again.
Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado você. George St. Pierre, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, George.